Get ready to whiten those knuckles and hold fast as we talk the most dangerous, daring, and epic sea stories ever told.
Whether facing ruthless men who prey on other mariners or storms that turn calm seas into graveyards, those who go down to the sea and cast off lines enter the most challenging and dangerous environment on Earth.
Only here will you hear their stories and the lessons gained through their experience. I'm your host, Phil.
And I'm Bill.
And we welcome you aboard the Had to Go Out podcast. Before we dive into this episode, we need to provide a disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast are those of the individuals involved and are not to be construed as official or reflecting the views of any government agency or military service. This podcast is an independent effort with no government association.
When the most is expected, the brave men and women of the U.S. Coast Guard are always ready. The National Coast Guard Museum will engage, educate, and inspire visitors by honoring the courage and skill of our nation's unsung armed service. The museum will explore the Coast Guard's rich history and current impact through interactive exhibits, STEM-based learning experiences, and leadership development programming. Find out how you can join the effort. Become a plank owner today. Visit CoastGuardMuseum.org/out. That's CoastGuardMuseum.org/OUT.
Hey, welcome to another episode of the Had to Go Out podcast. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you for subscribing to us on YouTube, especially YouTube.
Yeah, please subscribe on YouTube.
Yep, and on every podcast platform you listen on, and obviously the social media channels.
Yeah, and if it's your first time, we're glad to have you. You guys found a really special episode today. We're very stoked about the guest we have on. And after you love what you listen to, go back and subscribe. Send us a message on Instagram, any of the Twitter, any of the social media platforms. We're available on all of them. You find us at They Had to Go Out, and tell us what you want. If you've got a story, please, we'd love to hear it. There are there's no bad stories out there. We want to hear them all.
So this is a cool one today. This is one that, you know, sometimes opportunity comes knocking, like, randomly, and I think today was it.
Yeah.
So the Bosun Mate Rating Force Master Chief, basically the highest ranking or the highest Bosun Mate in the Coast Guard, the guy that makes the decisions about, you know, where Bosun Mates are assigned, and I'm sure a ton of other things, right? But basically the Bosun Mate decision maker for the Coast Guard. He runs his own podcast called Course Made Good, and tells, you know, basically pushes out info to every Bosun Mate in the fleet so that they can know what the heck's going on. Well, he came down to where Bill and I are at, and we were able to meet him, and here we are. We've got him in the room with us now.
I'm a little starstruck. I'm going to admit that.
I think we were a little starstruck.
Yeah, you guys know this.
So there's a...
Did we just become best friends? Is that what just happened?
Right. Step brothers. So who we've got here in front of us and with us today is Master Chief Bosun Mate Michael Ellis, born in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Joined the Coast Guard back in 1994 with Recruit Company Victor 144. First unit for an 18-year-old, was it Station New Orleans?
Bad move.
Bad move. But somehow made it out of there, I'm guessing without a green tablecloth, considering the position he's at now. But went to the Coast Guard Cutter Cushing out in Mobile. That's a 110. Then on to Station Niagara. We got some shared friends who were at Niagara around the same time. Then to the Coast Guard Cutter Sassafras out in Guam. First executive petty officer assignment was the Coast Guard Cutter Petrel in 87 out of beautiful San Diego. And then scored again and got XPO at Station Fort Myers Beach down in Florida.
Life was rough for a while.
Right? Yeah. And then scores a third time and gets an OIC job at ANT San Francisco. Went from there to the Coast Guard Cutter Scioto in Keokuk, Iowa.
Keokuk.
Made a crazy career decision, became a CMC at Sector Guam.
It was crazy.
And realized the error of his ways, came back to the OIC OIC route, went to Coast Guard Cutter Greenbrier up in Natchez, Mississippi, and now serves as the Rating Force Master Chief for by far the greatest rating of military service, right. Coast Guard, just in general.
Are there other ratings?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, if you're not a boatswain, you work for one, and you right. know it's true. Yeah. So with that, we've got I'll let Bill ask the question.
Yeah, after I stop laughing. Yeah. All right, Master Chief, with that being said, what's your most dangerous, daring, or epic sea story or stories?
Man, you guys, when you asked me that a few minutes ago to get ready for it, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm going to talk about.
Don't you love our preparation for this, yeah. too? Like
this? You know, over 20, well, first off, hey, I appreciate you giving me a chance to come on. I became huge fans, and when I said I was going to start a podcast when I was selected for the RFMC job, you're the first people I reached out to. I searched for podcasts and found yours, and I just think it's really, really cool what you're doing, the way you're honoring our heritage and making sure you preserve that legacy and tell those stories to the next generation is huge. And so it's an honor to be on it. I feel extremely unqualified for
It's funny because we just had the same conversation in reverse.
Right, right.
Course Made Good podcast and maybe episode 7 or so.
Yeah, you guys are episode 7. Well, so sea story, let's see. So I'm known as an Aton guy, right, because my officer in charge tours were in Aton, but this is a bit of a mix of the two. And
Aton and LE.
Yeah, yeah. At the same time.
It's a thing.
Cats and dogs living together.
Funny story, the last Coast Guard Authorization Act had this line item in it that was basically made Aton bounty hunting a thing. Like, if you could find guys that were damaging Aton, you could get, there was cash rewards somewhere.
I see my retirement job.
Yeah. Right? That's what I said. I mean, everybody.
It's like being a pirate.
Right? Yeah. Crazy.
So I was a BM1 out in Guam, and best place on earth. And we were underway working buoys, and I was coming from a station background, right? My chief, Red Williams, used to call me Star Dog down on the buoy deck. And I had, at the time, Bosun Mark Chrysler, now Commander Mark Chrysler. And if you don't know him, he's Aton all the way. And that was a tough crowd to follow up, right? I mean, I've got this two Aton-centric bosun and BMC that I work for, but to me they were heroes, and I get a chance to learn from them. But I got to show some of my own skills one day. We were underway, and I got there was a pipe mate on the ship and said, anybody with a boarding officer qual, lay to the wardroom.
Oh, man, you're in, right? That's a good pipe.
Finally, my moment has arrived.
Are you the only guy who shows up?
No, there were a few of us, and I think the statute of limitations is ran out, but we could talk about this one. But so I went back and said, what do we got? You know, what's going on? There was probably four or five of us out there that had done LE. Keep in mind, the framework of certification and qualification was much less defined back in the days, right? You're it was a little bit of, okay, yeah, you did it. Okay, fine. No one wanted to see my PQS or recency, but so I knew something was cooking. And
I like how you walked in like you owned it. You're like,
yeah, yeah.
All right, hey, what do we got?
What's up?
Right. What do we got? Where is it?
Yeah, tell me what's up.
Do we have guns?
We actually had some on the way down.
All right.
So we pulled the guns out, and we outfitted the boarding team. And the story was that there was a hostage that had been taken on one of the foreign fishing vessels that's out there. So
truly your moment.
Yes, right. This is it. It has finally come. And so our job was to intercept this fishing vessel, which the crew had. There was a mutiny on board, and they had taken the captain hostage. And at night, he's calling in via his single sideband radio and talking to his fish house. Taiwanese, I believe, and telling them he's been taken hostage. They're only keeping him alive until they can see land, which was U.S., which is Guam, right? And as soon as they get sight of land, they're going to throw him over the side, as they had already done the chief engineer. And he had been cut across his face from cheek to cheek while he slept with a knife by the crew. So it was a pretty tense situation, and we needed to go find this boat and intercept it and rescue the guy on
all right, the captain. So this one's going to be good. So I'm just curious. I always like to hear the planning phase, right? In your mind, right, as the BO for this to respond to this thing, on an Aton-specific cutter, and for anybody that doesn't know, Aton-specific, we're talking boats that work buoys primarily. Yeah, they don't really step out of that lane.
Well, right? In those days, they didn't step out at all. Right?
No,
right.
Not really. Bosun Chrysler was not a fan of this idea in any way.
After the show, we'll talk about some Bosun Chrysler stories. I worked for him when he was Lieutenant Chrysler.
I love him.
Yeah.
Well, you get the background. What's the thought? What are we going to do?
Well, I was a little intimidated, right? If you tell me we're just going to go do a boarding, I'm down. But we in the Coast Guard don't do a lot of high-risk hostage rescue. And so I'm like, okay, so how are we going to do this?
Did you guys even have body armor?
I think there was some old body armor down in a hold somewhere.
Are we talking like, or is this like Beretta 92Fs and like an 870 yes, with a wood stock?
Absolutely.
Yeah, awesome.
All of the above. Perfect. Yeah, old school. So we got all our gear at, and, you know, we did our best to come up with some sort of plan. But, I mean, you really have no intel on the boat. Or we kind of know roughly what it looks like, and we drew out a response about who would go where and who was going to be the boarding officer and who's going to try and rescue the guy. And we kind of know from boarding these boats in the past, we did some fisheries boardings, where the crew quarters would be, and expected them to be asleep at this time. Well, I was the smallest dude, so guess who got volunteered to go down into the berthing area, which is inside the engine room with these guys, these little tiny bunks, I mean, tiny, tiny little bunks that are actually in the engine room right next to a running generator.
And go get
the crew, you know, with your gun out. So I got volunteered for that assignment. So, well,
Did they frame it like that, or they're like, all right, you're going to do the extended ISS? Is there meaning to that?
No, it was just like, look, dude, you're going to go.
There we go.
There was an MK1 who was on his, like, 14th tour in Guam, and he was in charge, and Red Sharp, and super guy. But he said, all right, dude, you got to be the guy that goes into the engine room and grabs them all by the head and drags them out one by one. I'm like, by myself? Like, really? Okay, that was it. Fortunately, we get there early in the morning hours, and we do the boarding, and it was about as anticlimactic as you can imagine. I mean, everyone was completely compliant. I went into the engine room, had my gun drawn. I'm crawling on my hands and knees through there, grabbing people and forcing them out. They were completely compliant. Rescued the captain. He was thankful, and all was well. But then we had to prize crew the thing, and I stayed on board for another 2 days.
You're right. Crazy.
Did you have a Shania Twain CD at the time? Because that, remember yeah, that story?
Yeah, oh, I did hear that story, yeah.
I hope not. Could you imagine, like, Taiwanese music playing? I don't even know what it would sound like.
I can tell you that the smell on this boat was one that I will never forget. I'll always remember the smell of being on that thing for a long time. It was not pleasant. I spent a lot of time up on the forecastle, just getting up out of the way, and we'd take turns driving the thing. Here's this little Taiwanese fishing vessel longliner, and
you know what I love about that story is like it never fails with the Coast Guard, right? You'll have this something crazy goes on, you know, like a hostage rescue or I can't think of another one, but like that kind of level of like amped up, right? Yeah. Anybody else would treat this as a like an obscenely complex operation.
Yeah, we're like, hey man, just go do this. Yeah,
you got a boarding officer call? Let's hit it. You're going down below.
Hold on, let me find the gun.
But I mean, that's what you got to do when you're that far out. What else? You know, there's not.
Yeah,
we were a whole lot of options.
We were the only option. I mean, you know, if we were closer to stateside, we'd probably have an HRT unit or something, some advanced unit, or we'd have our own units now, right? That we've developed this capability, we could probably do a little bit better a job than Mike and Red and their Berettas.
Sounds like we didn't need to, though. That's all America needed at that moment.
Right. What kind of boat did the 180 have, like, to deliver you guys over there?
So we had two. We had a. I think it was a 24-foot SeaArk aluminum Tanby. We called it the Tanby, and then we had a 21-foot RHI.
Okay.
Yeah, old school.
I had visions maybe you guys going over there like an MSB, like bouncing.
Thank goodness we didn't have the MSB. Yeah, we didn't have the MSB, thank goodness. And yeah, I wouldn't have been a fan of that thing.
Yeah.
What was the feeling jumping over the gunwale? Because you jumped, right? I mean, you had to make it dramatic. I know you made it dramatic. We all make it dramatic when something like that happens.
I don't know. You know, I think I was just nervous and didn't want to screw up. You know, I really looked up to
finger
leadership.
Outside the trigger guard.
Yes. Yeah, yes. Certainly. You know, I looked up to the leadership on that boat so much, from Bosun Chrysler and Captain Caleb Corson. He was lieutenant commander at the time. And Commander now Captain Mary Ellen Durley, herself a CO on a red one, was my XO, and he just didn't want to screw it up. I didn't want to be the guy who ruined the operation. I mean, it's a hostage rescue.
Right,
I mean,
yeah,
for Pete's sake, it's not exactly like pulling up an 8-footer.
Right, yeah.
I'm sure Bosun Chrysler was just wondering when we get back to working buoys.
Phil doesn't understand what you said.
No, I got that. I did 10 months at AK Bay, man. I know.
It's the first time you've ever admitted it publicly.
No, I shouldn't have. I only do that because we're in the presence of Master Chief. Otherwise, I would have never said it.
I knew I liked you.
That was it.
That's funny.
I got two questions for you, Master Chief.
Yeah, man.
First SAR case ever.
As a qualified coxswain, I remember it well.
Yeah, let's do qualified. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's strangely enough, it has an LE nexus to it.
Nice.
So, I was qualified at Station Niagara as a BM3. And, got a call of shots fired in the river. Yeah, someone shooting. which is what happens when it's bird season.
Yeah.
But young Mike Ellis was there, and went up the river as fast as I could, only to pull up to a couple duck hunters. And
good to go. That's
first,
awesome.
First case, yeah. I thought it was ready to save the world.
Right.
But nope.
Yeah. I know it's the AOR up there is nuts, right? Because you got, it's basically Canada on one side of the river, yeah, and America claims the other, mm-hmm, and lots, yeah, of cigarette smuggling. And
yeah, there's a lot of stuff. It, yeah, complicates your boarding process, too. So
it, plus it gets cold.
It was very cold. Water gets hard up there.
Right.
Yeah, it does.
A large portion of the season. Yeah.
That's good. What, as an officer in charge, you're one of the few that we've had that's been in command, right? So, most impactful officer in charge story, maybe, or most challenging one?
Well, you know, being an officer in charge, I think we need to recognize that.
Can you talk about that a little bit too? Because I think a lot of people don't know, and it's unique to the Coast Guard. The officer in charge.
Yeah,
program.
We're the only military service that allows enlisted personnel to command units, and we have a very, very, very rigorous selection process that we use to make sure we only put the best qualified candidates up for that. And it's exclusive to the bosun mate rating, and will always be. We are the ones who, from birth in the service, from what you have a unique perspective on that, get a chance to be put into positions of leadership very, very early in our careers. And through an accelerated process, we're taught how to lead others to accomplish a mission. And
accelerated. I'm just thinking, by the time you walk out with the crow, you know, you're BM3 crow, like,
yeah,
accelerated, you're leading people.
Yeah. Well, and you are. I mean, there's no other service that puts that amount of responsibility to certify as a coxswain. Small boat coxswain, and to start leading others to do the Coast Guard's jobs and every mission set very, very early in your career. And it's an awesome responsibility, and it's awesome to be a part of that in the Coast Guard, and to represent those women and men at headquarters now is the honor of my life. I mean, this is just, this tour to me means more than anything else, and second to my family, of course. But I'm so happy to be here.
Nice
and
save.
Good save.
That was a good
Your
save.
Wife was going to be upset.
I'm just going to make sure the door's unlocked when I get home.
We had a guy before that was talking about, what was it, 36-foot wooden sailing boats?
Yeah.
Wooden motor lifeboats, and he was like, I totally leave her for it.
His wife was in the car with him. He was
right,
like,
she was sitting next to him.
Oh, my
God.
You just
hear her chuckling in the background.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. No, but it's, you know, to have a chance to represent those that do those things to Coast Guard leadership to me is just an awesome responsibility. Perhaps second, though, to my responsibilities as an officer in charge. I mean, you know, my three tours as an OIC were very, very special to me. And I think it's important as officers in charge to allow yourself to grow even in those positions. So the officer in charge on my last tour as OIC at Greenbrier, that person is vastly different than the person that took over Ant San Francisco, 12 years ago. That much different outlook on life, much different place in life, and because of that, your leadership changes, right? And there's times I wish I could go back and do that tour over. I'll say that you need to allow yourself to mature, both as a person and as a leader, and accept the fact that you're going to change. The things that are important to you in your career as an OIC early may change. I mean, I think you keep your moral compass continually pointed north, right? We always have the same values and ideals, but we evolve as people, and as such, as we evolve as people, so will your leadership and the way you mentor others. And letting it happen, I think, is important. I fought it for a little bit, but the relationship that I was able to have with the crew of the Greenbrier is one of the most special things to me in the world. They're like brothers to me, and I'd do anything in the world. I'd lay in traffic for every guy on that boat, and I'm just walking through the halls of Training Center Yorktown here. I walked past the door and looked in and saw a young seaman of mine that's in your classes, and wave to him, and I want to text him later, say hello. But that was a very, very special tour to me. So yeah, I really enjoyed it, and that was a perfect way to transition into the headquarters environment. Is having a tour that was that successful and leaving that headed to HQ was perfect.
Right. We've got a lot more of this episode to go, and we'll get right back to it after this short ad from our sponsor. We're going to give you a key number about the future National Coast Guard Museum, and that number is 5.
There are 5 themed storylines: lifesavers around the globe, enforcers on the seas, defenders of our nation, champions of commerce, and protectors of the environment.
The exhibits and galleries in those storylines will be showcased in a 5-story museum.
And here's our favorite 5. For as little as $5 a month, You can be a plank owner and support construction of the National Coast Guard Museum.
For details on how you can get involved, go to coastguardmuseum.org/out. That's coastguardmuseum.org/OUT.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it. I mean, that has to be a change going going from the Greenbrier to headquarters.
I used to live 3 miles from work. Now I live 3 hours from work.
You probably still live 3 miles, but it takes you 3 hours.
It's quite a lifestyle change.
Right,
yeah.
For sure. Oh, man. So in command 3 times, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you think it changed? How did your, like, some of those leadership things change?
Yeah, so
I think people are going to get a benefit out of this because it's kind of it's rare that you get somebody that's especially been in command. We're talking a military command by an enlisted member for over 12 years, right? So for over a decade on 3 different units.
Yeah.
What advice would you impart to people?
Well, so it would seem odd for anybody else in any other service, but for the Coast Guard, I mean, there are OICs serving right now that have probably twice as much time as I did as an officer in charge. I mean, you know, you can really stay in that position. In the Coast Guard, unlike other services, but your leadership changed. So, I mean, I think the thing that the aha moment for me was when I completed a tour as a Command Master Chief and then went back as an OIC. It was vastly different because now I knew what the sector really needed out of me as a unit commander, right? So, I think when we, through our process of certifying officers in charge, we leave you with the impression that any single mistake is the end, and that's just simply not true, right? We allow folks to make we all have to make decisions in real time, and as long as your intentions were there, right, and pure, and you made it with all the relevant information you could, even though you do that, sometimes they don't work out as well. And I think we leave new officers in charge with the impression that it's a zero-defect society, and I don't agree with that. I think there's room for continued growth, and there's room for a healthy level of risk to be assumed.
Hear, hear.
How did I change from the first one to the last one? I think I was just willing to accept a little bit more risk and knew where my boundaries were. And because of that, I became a much more easy person to work with, I'd like to think, right? When you're young and you're hungry and it's your first OIC tour, especially if it's a mission set that you've never worked in before, as it was mine, you press hard on all the buttons. And I think in your last OIC tour, and you've learned where the boundaries are at and you know who you are a little bit more, you ease up a bit. And, mm-hmm. And I focused, instead of focusing solely on the mission, as I did in my first tour, I focused primarily on the people, and let the mission take care of itself. Because when your crew feels like that you have their best interests in mind, it's amazing the things they'll do for you. And you don't have to worry about the mission because the crew's doing the mission because they respect you, and they know that you will 100% have their back at all times. With that comes, there's always the unfortunate thing that you have to do. Sometimes you have to hold somebody accountable. But even that sends a message of compassion to the crew a lot of times. If you do it the right way and you make sure that you're fostering their growth and you do it in a way that's proportionate to the infraction, I think even that can have a positive effect on the crew too. But yeah.
I don't even know if you meant to take it full circle, right? But like what you just said, where you, you kind of trust that your crew's doing it because they respect you, right? On that first story that you told, you, I think, repeatedly said that your OIC CO at the time, like, you didn't want to screw up because you didn't want to let him down. So
I guess it did, right?
Pretty cool that it came back around like that. And,
you should be a counselor, Phil. You should be a counselor.
I just listen. Well, I do, right?
In his job, he basically is. Yeah. Some days.
26 BM1 some days. Yeah.
Yeah.
What leadership philosophy? What's the, or the command philosophy? I mean, people would want to know.
I might get in trouble for my response to this one. Uh-oh. So I'm not a fan, I'll admit, I'm not a fan of a bunch of lofty ideals that are just posted to the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan of trying to impress the crew with the depth of your language or the depth of your vocabulary, rather. I don't think that serves any purpose other than perhaps even to alienate your crew because you put all these things that you may or may not adhere to. You put these lofty ideals on the wall and you reference it and you make the crew repeat it at quarters. And I don't know, man. To me, that just smacks of a little bit of... I think it's unnecessary, especially in small unit commands. What I do think is if you're going to write it down, you damn well better be living it, you know? And I like ones that are very simple and you can adhere to, and that they mean something. I just had a Master Chief on an 87 send me his recently, Master Chief Martinez, and he said, "Hey, I'd love to know what you think about it," which is rare because most time Master Chiefs aren't really looking to have somebody else give them input on their command philosophy. So I was a little surprised, but I got a chance to read it, and it refreshed it told me that, okay, these things can be useful, because his was so spot on, and it spoke at the deck plate level. It talked about taking care of each other. It talked about the mission. It talked about taking care of yourself. And, you know, it was all the things that I think are impactful statements for folks at that age, that his target audience, his crew. But I don't like to see buzzwords and making the crew repeat it at quarters like we're mini flag officers. I mean, those things are important for flag officers to have, right? Because they set the tone for their entire command, and even senior level O6s as well. I get that. Those make sense. But I think when we emulate that at the small unit framework, I don't know that it translates directly.
Man, it's a good thing you're in that job.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, I'm just sitting here thinking, like, I loved how this whole thing started out, Master Chief, where you talked about people having a chance to make a mistake, and with you being able to do it three times and have the CMC job. Because I know there's a lot of discussion around here. I mean, this building's full of potential officers in charge.
Absolutely.
You know, BM1s. Trying to make chief, thinking about sitting for it in there. There's definitely a feeling that, yeah, like, do I want to do this? Because I'm going to be under a microscope the whole time. And if I screw up, and to hear that from your position, that no, everybody knows you're going to make mistakes. It's what mistakes you make.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's just a byproduct. That feeling is a byproduct of how rigorous the training and selection process is. Right. And, it leaves you with the impression that maybe a little bit too harsh is that we don't expect you to screw up, and if you do, you're done. I don't agree with that. And it's not me. I'm not the person that you would be held accountable by any means.
Right.
Every sector commander, every sector response officer I've dealt with, or prevention for ATON folks, I don't see that. I don't see that level of micromanagement. I mean, sometimes there's administrative micromanagement, and I get that. I hear those stories from ROICs, and they have valid concerns about that. But as we all try and feed the beast and get information that's necessary up to our leadership, I mean, I get it. That can cause a burden, but I think that there's room for growth even as an officer in charge, and I think we need to allow ourselves to grow as leaders, and sometimes that means making a couple mistakes. Now, I'm not talking about moral mistakes, right? I'm not talking about mistakes of morality. I'm not talking about areas in which you compromise your values, your own personal values. And if you're compromised in some of those, then the best thing for them to do is to get somebody else.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I'm talking about the risk that we all take in conducting the Coast Guard's mission every day. We do risky stuff. As bosun mates, I mean, we're asked to make split-second decisions that have life and death consequences, and we do that over and over and over. And I don't think there's enough conversation about what effect that can have on bosun mates long-term in their life. We talk a lot about first responders and then some of the effects that chronic stress can have on them and how they interact with their families. I don't know. I'd like to have more of a conversation about how that affects bosun mates, just as well as our EMTs, firefighters, and police officers.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, that was.
I mean, I think to your point, Master Chief, what I've seen in my, albeit less time in the Coast Guard, is if you screw up, but you screw up for the right reason,
yeah,
you're going to get a second chance.
Certainly.
And that's what I think people need.
Bill's
to hear.
Really worried about screwing up.
No, I'm a huge screw up. I tell everybody ahead of time, I'm a huge screw up.
I
fell
man.
Backwards into this job. I don't know how it happened, but
I urinate excellence, if you will. Master Chief, what was the first coxswain qual? What boat?
So on 41357 at Station Niagara.
41 Sailor, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And best boat in the Coast Guard throughout your career?
It's got to be the 29-foot RBS-2.
Oh, my God. The interview over.
Yeah, it was going really well up to right there.
I knew you guys would appreciate that. Best boat, best small boat in the Coast Guard?
Best small boat.
Interesting. You know, I'm a fan of the original 25. I liked it. I thought that was a good boat. And I had a chance to drive it as the XPO, the first time as the XPO stationed Fort Myers Beach, and I was impressed with what it would do. And my first time I drove it, honestly, was when I came to the RBSC school that was here before we got the boat. And I remember going, you know, full speed on the boat, and the instructor, who was a senior chief at the time, kind of a squirrely dude, I was a BMC, I looked over, and he grabbed the wheel and turned it as fast as he could and hard as he could to the left, and I'm sitting in the back seat, and I'm thinking, we're going to die.
We're going to die.
And that boat did something more violent than I'd ever seen, and just the next thing, when I open my eyes again, we're going the opposite direction just as fast, and I'm like, wow.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm going to get in trouble as an Aton guy telling all these stories about...
I'll give it back to you real fast. Yeah, so okay. Just from that story of turning the wheel, so being a 25 coxswain for a long time, right? I go to this ant team for 10 months, and I don't want to be there. I don't want to... Whatever.
The
ant team. Ant, whatever. Aton. And they have one of those... skiffs, the Aton boat skiffs. It's like a 16 flat bottom boat with a 40 outboard on it, right? And I go to make the turn, and man, I turned that thing a little bit too hard. So on that flat bottom, and we just started skipping
around.
Yeah, I thought we were going like over top of the ICW and then like, you know, some barrier island. It was wild. So,
yeah, man, we got to get you some time in a John boat.
Yeah, man. No, I remember when I was at Ann Potomac, we got the ABS, which was the 20 footer with twin 50s on the back. Yep. The boat only weighs like 1,000 pounds. You put twin 50 horse on the back, it moves.
Yeah,
You turn that thing and just like an airboat across the water.
After riding on the Busel once, and then they hand me this thing, and I feel like I'm back in the Coast Guard. You know what I mean? And I go to turn, it didn't work.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, Busel's a big pig.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Master Chief, awesome to have you on the show, and thank you.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for telling the stories. And can you let people know, all the boatswain mates in the Coast Guard, particularly? But I think there's probably a lot of lessons in your podcast anyway, just for leadership. I mean, we were talking about OIC colleges and stuff the other day. But where can they find you?
So I have a side project, which is it's not an official means of communication as the RFMC. It's just something I started to kind of give a direct line to every boatswain mate in the Coast Guard to hear some of the things that I think are important to their career, and it's called the Course Made Good podcast. So if you go to Apple Podcast or if you go to Spotify and search Course Made Good, which should be a familiar term to all of us boatswain mates, and you can subscribe there. And we're about to have 7 episodes up. So a lot of that's kind of a little bit focused on policy and focused on things that are coming down. But I, too, like to have guests on to tell their stories. And I love how our two shows complement each other. So it's cool to finally put them both together.
For sure. Absolutely. It was great to meet you, Master Chief. And wish you all the luck in your current position.
Thank you.
You know, long live the boatswain mate rating.
Yeah. Well, it'll never die.
It'll never die. Yeah. And, even with drone boats.
Even if you're not a boatswain mate, you should listen to Master Chief's podcast because you're going to work for one.
Also true.
These are things I can't say at headquarters.
You can kill that drone boat program anytime.
Yeah, anytime.
Yep, anytime.
I hadn't heard about it. I want to talk about
it.
It
exists. Yeah, we'll talk about that later. About Thanks again, Master Chief.
Thank you, guys.
Before we end this, we want to give a plug for some people and organizations that we believe in.
The Coast Guard Foundation supports the brave men and women of the Coast Guard when they need it the most, providing everything from financial aid to families in crisis to scholarships and playground equipment. As a nonprofit 501c3 charity, they count on our donations to deliver this support. Visit CoastGuardFoundation.org. That's CoastGuardFoundation.org to read about their programs and donate what you can to support those who guard our nation's coast.
Another one to check out is the Always Ready Collective, which delivers art by and for some daring fighters of the sea. Head over to Etsy, Facebook, or Instagram and search Always Ready Collective to check out their Coast Guard and Maritime-focused tattoo flash, pinups, and propaganda. You won't be disappointed. Anyone who gets one of their designs inked on their body will get featured on their feed and can be sent a care package on the house. Find a design you like, some blank canvas, and get it done.
Thanks for taking the time to listen.
If you like what this podcast is about and what we delivered, look us up at theyhadtogooout.com or your favorite podcast platform. And like, comment, subscribe, and share so we can keep the momentum up and do bigger things going forward.
Look for a new episode every Sunday. Until then, fair winds and following seas.